So tonight, you know, obviously I'm speaking, which I'm super stoked about, but I was actually tempted to do something a little bit different tonight because in youth ministry, there seems to be like this, I guess, all-time high of disengagement, of where young people just think, you know what, I'm just going to play some Flappy Bird or whatever the new game is at the moment and just go on. I know that was pretty old, but it was the only game that came to my mind, so please pray for me. But I was actually thinking maybe I could do some bingo in today's message, you know, like hand out little bingo sheets. Do we all know what bingo is, or are you all too young? Yep. So I'd hand it out. And that idea was actually brought to me from my wonderful, taller yet younger sister. She gave me the idea where she tagged me in this beautiful meme. It's very well constructed. Made me have a good little chuffle, laugh, I should say. And it was a meme where it pretty much goes through and says all these church lingo things that we say during our services. Things like, hey, church, I can't believe we get to do this. The message, turn to the person next to you, lean in together. How good is God? Passion for. How good is church? So good. Connect. It's going to be the best. Next steps. We sing, volunteer. How's everybody doing? All time. Who loves Jesus? So excited. Do life together. Literally can't wait. Best ever. So literally I was thinking, you know what, instead of that, I'm just going to work as many of these into my message as we can. So stay tuned and see how many of them you can pick out. But tonight I want to talk to you about Jesus. I know, earth-shattering new stuff, but the fact is that this term is all about the truth, and you can't talk about the truth unless you talk about who is the truth, and that is Jesus. And I'm super excited to be talking about Jesus. He's my bro, he's my mate. He's also my father, and he's also the greatest guy I could ever know. And I think I'm only just starting to actually fully grasp, not even fully, but just like a little bit more grasp the message of Jesus. Not that it's like confusing or like really hard to understand. It's just the fact that it's so different, and just the fact that it's so counter culture, it's so counterintuitive, it's so complex to our brains because of the society we live in that we actually don't realize the simplicity of it. We actually think that we need to overthink the message of Jesus, but in fact, his message has and always will be so simple. And you might have already have some ideas or thoughts about the Bible or Jesus, but I'd like to invite you to open your minds and your heart tonight as we read and discuss what that message is that Jesus wanted to bring to us. And as we read and discuss what his message and purpose really was, and if you do, I think you'll discover a new whole idea of what you think Jesus is. A Jesus who will radically change the way you see God, yourself and others around you. It might not be what you believe, it might not exactly be what you believe about Jesus, but I promise you, if you just open your mind and open your heart to the fact that of who he could be and what he could be, I guarantee you your changing will be changed tonight. And if you don't believe about Jesus, that's fine too. You don't have to believe a certain thing or behave a certain way to be welcomed by Jesus or be welcomed by us here at our city. Come as you are, because he accepts you as you are. That's the beauty of the gospel. We seem to complex it and say you need to behave a certain way. And it's not even we necessarily make it complex. It's the fact that we as a church like to think we need to actually live holy in order to be holy in Jesus' eyes. But he, in fact, already made us holy by dying on the cross. And so tonight, as we read about Jesus' message of grace, love, and friendship, I think you'll discover more about him than you ever imagined. Jesus calls us friends, not because of who we are or what we have done, but who he is and what he has done for us. And he's the friend of all people. He invites us all into friendship with him. And I think in today's world, both in church and not in church, there needs to be a greater focus on friendship and relationship, because there's good friends, the right friends, and then there's also just good people. Myself, I have discovered this a lot recently, that just because they're good people doesn't make them the right people for you. Friendship is all about encouragement. It's all about building one another up. It's all about encouraging the good things that are in each other. It's not actually about discouragement. It's not about actually turning to one another and criticizing each other. It's not about the fact of giving, I love this word, constructive feedback. I think that is such a lie. I think when people give you constructive feedback, it's just an excuse to actually tear you down rather than actually build you up. And I think Jesus' message was pretty simple in the fact that he always built people up. He always turned to people and encouraged them. He saw the good in people, not the bad. And I think that's a real glimpse into what our friendships and our relationships should be. So, and tonight, that's what I want to talk to us about. The fact is that love is encouraging, kind, and that's what friendship should be based on. And Jesus gives us the prime example of this. Have you ever missed the important details of something? Like, have you ever been maybe somewhere in life where you need to plan for something, or maybe you're reading a book and you think, I'll just skip a few chapters because this is taking a while to get through. Or maybe it's a movie and you go, you know what? Leonardo DiCaprio is pretty boring in this movie. I'll skip forward. Said no one ever. But maybe if it was, you know, someone else like, I don't know, who's a really poor actor these days. If Justin Bieber ever did a movie, I'm pretty sure that'd be pretty poor. No offense to the Justin Bieber fans. I mean, I love JB. He's a great guy from what I've seen. Not that I know him personally. But if he was in a movie, I'd say his acting skills wouldn't be the greatest because he probably hasn't acted before. And have you ever, besides the point, have you ever missed important facts about something? Have you ever missed something which was quite crucial to what you were doing or going to do? My beautiful wife, who seems to have left the room for some reason, that's okay. I can just encourage her why she's not here. Oh, she's back. Wonderful timing. It's like she knew I was talking about her. My beautiful wife and I, we'd just gotten married. Best day of our lives. We head over to New Zealand for our wonderful honeymoon. Wonderful time. And she planned the whole honeymoon because I really couldn't be bothered at the time. I was just like, yeah, whatever. I was like, we'll just do it as it comes. But she's like, no, we need to plan it. That she was the wise one. Anyway, we decided that we'd climb this mountain, particular mountain near where we were going. And we thought, you know what? We're going to just go up for this casual stroll up this mountain. Like, whoever's done Mount Warning, anyone? Yeah. Yep. Now, Mount Warning to me wasn't like a challenge, I would say. I mean, it depends if you... Apparently, some people do it in the heat of the day. Don't know why that would be, but some people do. And then that would be a challenge, I would say. But if you do it over a morning or over an afternoon, I'd say it's pretty easy. It's pretty cruisy, you know, like just a bit of a steep alpine here and there. The hardest bit is that rock bit, I would say, where you have to climb up those rocks. But you know what? I just feel like man versus wild in that moment. It's pretty great. But anyway, I was thinking, you know what? That's what all mountains should be like, really. That's what they're all like, you know, like really assuming at the best of times and just going, yeah, let's climb a mountain. It'll be fun. It'll be fun, he said. And so we decided we'll climb this mountain. We thought it'd be a casual stroll, and we thought, you know what, it's a volcano, it's not currently active, but that'll be fun. We'll climb up it, it'll be so much fun. Fun was the key word. And we thought, you know what, we'll do it just the day before Beth's 21st, because, you know, what a better way to spend our time. We're meant to be relaxing and enjoy each other's company, and we thought a mountain is the best way to do that. Can't think of anything better. Climbing up a mountain, it'll be just like these nice ramps. You know, we'll be able to stop every now and then for a drink. It'll be nice, cool weather. It'll be just beautiful. And so we thought it'd just be a casual stroll, you know, just 50 kilometres. And I personally didn't think to research or even just think past the idea of climbing about this mountain. And anyway, my lovely wife, she planned the whole trip and she just thought the same as me because I told her it'd just be fine. And so we just thought, you know, it'll be fine. It'll be fine, they said. Typical Aussies. So when we get there, we both forgot to check not only how far you should climb it, and in fact, if there's two different routes, and if the fact that there's a particular way you should climb the different routes, and if in fact how long that route actually takes. And what sort of climb is it? Is it beginner? Is it intermediate? Is it like quite advanced? We didn't think to look up any of these things. So we rock up. I rocked up in, you could say, pretty average wear. It was just like, you know, I wasn't trying to look fit. I wasn't trying to look like I was too serious about this thing. I would say the word was casual. Very casual. I'm pretty sure I didn't even wear joggers, to be honest. And my wife wore sandals there. She thought, you know, I wanted to look like I was ready, but not quite too overdressed, but not too underdressed either. So we both rock up quite the same. And let's just say we began the climb. It was very long, very exhausting. Got to about a quarter and we still hadn't seen anyone. And we thought, wow, this is really strange. You know, this is the most popular climbing destination in New Zealand and we haven't seen anyone. And I was thinking to myself along the way, it's quite steep, to be honest. Like, there's stairs every now and then, but they're quite steep, like very steep. And the calves were burning, to say the least. It was leg day at its max. And then we saw this huge group going the opposite way to us. And we thought, that's so weird. Like, they're the first people we thought they're going the opposite way. What weirdos. You know, it wasn't us that was weird, it was them. And we're like, you're going the wrong way. That's what they start saying to us. We thought, we'll just try a conversation. You know, we're Aussies. We're really nice people. We'll just talk to them. And so my wife's like, no. Beth's like, no, there's something wrong here. I feel like something's not right. So she starts to talk to them. She goes, hi, you know, how are you? Like, casual stuff. And we're like, what's going on here? Like, you're the first people we've seen. And they go, you've actually gone the wrong way. Why are you coming from that direction? They're like, it's another 8 hours that direction. It's already like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we're like, great. Yeah, super. And we actually found out that not only is it 8 hours that way, by the time we got there, would it only have been dark. It would have been the most intense climb because there's a certain way you're meant to climb it because otherwise it's too steep and you're just going to get 10 times more exhausted. So to say the least, we missed the point. And Jesus came to earth, this is the reason why I told that story, is that Jesus came to earth with quite a specific message. Yet his teachings, his miracles, his reactions to people, his death and resurrection and all communicate one main point. Yet it's far too easy for us to miss it. This can happen to the best of us, and probably has. It's happened to me quite a few times. And even well-intentioned, good-hearted, spiritually-minded people can overlook it. We might have a portion of the message. We might have this small amount where we go, yep, I understand what Jesus is about. I understand his gospel. I understand the reason why he came here. But we still can miss the wider picture of why Jesus came. The problem is if we miss his message long enough, we'll end up somewhere God never intended us to be, and we won't like the result. I find many people are spiritually confused and worn out, not because Christianity is hard or too complex or that God is a tyrant or because they have missed what Jesus came to say. Some people think that Jesus came to preach about the good works. They think the goal of his life was to get us to talk better, to act better, to be better just in general. Following Jesus, therefore, is about behavioral change. Has anyone heard this? Where they think that, you know what, Jesus is all about making me a better person. I have to change and act like a better person in order to be accepted by Jesus and be accepted into his kingdom. It's about fixing yourself and those around you. Maybe not in that order. Maybe you want to fix everyone else around you, then fix yourself. There's some people like that. Others think that Jesus came to establish a holier-than-thou country club religion. His goal was that a bunch of abnormally self-disciplined and equally self-righteous people would get together, call themselves the church, and spend their days dispensing judgment against a sinful world. Has anyone met people like that? And they literally sometimes talk in a British accent just for the sake of it. And still others think that Jesus was merely a philosopher. You know, he was just a wise guy. He just had some great ideas. Has anyone heard that? Yeah, I don't believe in Jesus, but, you know, he was a nice guy. Yeah, just nice, typical nice guy. Had some ideas, but, you know, I wouldn't follow the guy. He's definitely not God. And he didn't deserve, some people say, oh, he didn't deserve what happened to him. He just ticked off the wrong people, to be honest. He ticked off the establishment. That was his problem. But it always happens. Only the good die young, they could say. Some think that Jesus was a protest against evil. His whole point was his message. His life and death was a legacy and an inspiration, but nothing more. There was nothing more to it. It was just that he came to inspire us and then leave and be like, see ya, bye. But the list of opinions will go on. Some people say he was a rebel. He was a zealot who wanted to overthrow the Roman Empire and failed. Others say he was a prophet who believed and preached the end of the world was imminent. Others say he was insane, a con man, or a liar. The more I read the stories about Jesus and listen to his words, the more I'm convinced that those views and others like them fall very short of what truly Jesus was. C.S. Lewis says a quote where either Jesus is the most important thing that we've ever come across in human history, or if he's not, it's simply that it's a lie and it's not even relevant to our lives. There's no in-between. You can't be, you know, in-between on the fence and be like, oh, yeah, he was good, but he wasn't great. No, it's either he was a complete lunatic or he was actually the savior of the earth. There's no in-between. And Jesus didn't come simply for behavior modification. He didn't come to create a religious club or a clique. He didn't come merely as a philosopher or a life coach or maybe to start up F45 or some other great club. Jesus' message is far more simple yet far more powerful than any of those concepts. Maybe you aren't too sure about Jesus' claim to be God. in your mind, the jury is still out on whether his words and teachings should carry weight in your life. And that's okay. I understand where you're at. That doesn't bother me a bit. We're all on a journey of getting to know God, getting to know life and ourselves. None of us have all the answers. Least of them are me. I definitely don't have all the answers. But even if you aren't sure where you stand on Jesus or the Bible, most of us would agree for that some reason Jesus lived a uniquely impacting life. Can we say that here tonight? That there is for some reason that Jesus was just like, he was out of this world. He was different. Whether you believe he was God or not, he still lived an impactful life to those around him. For some reason, his birth split human chronology in half. Sorry about my English. For some reason, his teachings and his stories resonate in the human heart. Like when you read one of those stories that he used to teach or any of his teachings he gave to the human history, it actually hits something deep in your heart, whether you wanted to admit it or not. When you read the words that Jesus spoke to us as humans, it actually starts to spark something inside us and go, you know what? There's something about this guy. Whether you want to admit that because, you know, your friends will judge you, or whether you don't, that's a completely different thing. For some reason, millions of people from every nation in every century attribute positive changes in their lives to him. For some reason, people pray in his name time and time again, report answers to their prayers. For some reason, his teachings and principles are so integrated into our thinking that we often quote him and don't even know it. The answer might surprise you and it may impact your life forever. To answer the question, I want to look at a little story in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew is a classic gospel. It's actually the first one. Just had to double check that in my mind. The Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, are all full of stories meant to paint a picture of Jesus' life. They present in gritty, compelling detail a man consumed with a message of life. One of the most revealing stories is actually how Matthew, you know, funny that, the writer of the book, was a man formerly known as Levi. Man, he got a real upgrade on his name, just saying. But encountered Jesus. The brief story reveals much about Jesus' message and mission that we actually want to admit and realize. Before I jump into the story, you might be wondering why this guy has two names. You're like, what the heck? Can't trust a guy that has two names. A bit like neck tattoos. So to explain, I thought of a relevant pop culture example who knows superheroes such as the Avengers. Who knows them? The Avengers. Can I just say, Avengers Endgame, oh my goodness, like shook, like ready, come at me. We're going to be at President's Conference, and I tell you what, to the guys that are coming to President's Conference, we're going, just saying that. Because that, other than the gospel, is the other thing that's going to accumulate in my life. And the Infinity War, when Thanos snapped his finger, damn. But anyway, I won't get into that. That's a different day, different message. And who knows, Captain America or Spider-Man? Anyone know those guys? You know, if you don't know, Captain America is the guy with the shield, you know, real American. Captain America. Spider-Man's that teenage, irritating kid at times that swings around with web and you're like, what the heck? And when you see him get bitten by the spider, it sends shivers up your spine. Not because of how cool it was, just because of how creepy it was. And my immediate thought is back in my day, Tobey Maguire was the Spider-Man. Does anyone know who he is, Tobey Maguire? A few of the older people. And there's a scene in Spider-Man 3, I don't know if you've seen it, but It was actually on the TV the other day, and it goes, they play that song, How Do You Like Me Now? Do you know that song, everyone? No. Anyway, I'm not going to sing it because I can't really sing, and my wife knows that. But he's pretty much striding down this thing, and he's got, does everyone know Venom? Has everyone heard about that movie? Anyway, in this movie, Spider-Man gets infected with whatever that thing is, and he becomes really cool, what he thinks is cool, and he's like strutting down the street like this, and he like sees this lady because he's just broken up with his girlfriend. He's like, winks at her and just keeps walking because he thinks he's just like, you know, the coolest guy. And that's what comes to my mind when I think of Spider-Man. Not that that was relevant to you. Or maybe Justice League is the kind of person you are. Batman, you know, Ben Affleck, all those cool kind of guys. Or maybe Superman, undies on the outside. Yeah. Maybe that's your type of thing. And the funny thing is now, if you aren't familiar with superheroes, I've come up with a definition for myself. I had to really play it down because I'm a real superhero nut. Wife will attest to that. And superheroes generally live lives under a rock superhero. Generally have two names. They have a name for work because they don't want people to know who they are and that for their real identity to get out. And they have a completely different or want to be known as a completely different person. Matthew was clearly not Superman. Didn't wear any undies on the outside. Not that I know of anyway. And I mean, if anyone was Superman in the flesh, it was Jesus. But let's not get into that. But his occupation did not require a non-Hebrew name. He had been born Levi, a Jew. And at some point, however, he became known by a Greek name, Matthew. Confusing, I know, but I'll get into it. His name and his identity, just like superheroes, were intertwined. There was an important reason for that, which I'll get into a bit later. Later in life, Matthew turned out to be an incredible guy. He was one of actually Jesus' 12 disciples and one of the authors of the New Testament. And he actually was one of the people to start the church. And he wrote the gospel that bears his name, funny that, which is why most of us remember him. We sometimes forget that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were actually real people, because it's like other books of the Bible, and we're like, okay, they're just names of the book. But actually, they're the writers. And much earlier, though, before he met Jesus, he wasn't such a nice guy, to be honest. Let's be frank, he wasn't such a nice guy. And actually, that's an understatement. I'm trying to be nice, because we're in church. Matthew was the quintessential bad guy. Like Venom. Oh, no, Venom's sort of like a superhero. Let's not get into that. He wasn't just a run-of-the-mill got bad. He was actually an outright criminal. And he was blatantly and intentionally famously bad. Does that put some good adjectives into your mind? He was the kind of person parents warned their kids about. You know, when your parents talk to you when you're going out, maybe you're hanging out with friends, or even coming here to youth, to be honest, and they go, don't go to those sort of people. Watch out for these sort of guys. Matthew was that guy. You don't want to be hanging around Matthew, otherwise your mum might slap you in the face. I mean, that's probably a bit brutal, but back in the day when I was growing up, that's the sort of thing that happened. Now, you probably didn't gasp or blush when you read that, but you know what? Matthew was a tax collector. Earth-shattering, I know. Earth-shattering. Who thinks that is the worst thing you've ever heard of in your life? Yep, okay, a few of us already are there. Good. And for those who didn't put your hand up, I'll get you there in just a second. But the thing is, anyone living in that day and culture would have gasped at the word tax collector. They would have went, oh no, honey, no you didn't. Not the tax collectors. And it wasn't that the tax collector was a robe wearing, you know, ATO guy, like, where's your taxes? Give me your taxes, like type of guy. He was more like a mafia boss, a gangster, the OG. Matthew was the tax collector, was not a man to be trifled with. He put the original in OG. He was like all the three Godfather movies in one person. Shout out to Joel. He loves those movies. He was literally the Godfather in a person. Or maybe you're thinking Thanos, worst bad guy you've ever seen in your life. He was like if Thanos was, you know, times by 500, that is Matthew the tax collector. At the time, Rome was the supreme world superpower, and Israel was one of the lands they had conquered. The Roman army was notoriously brutal and barbaric. Numerous historical accounts record Rome sacking cities. They would often kill many of the men, they would attack the women, and enslave the children. They were like your standard, above standard bad guys, essentially. History recounts instances when the army lined the streets with people dying on crosses, so anyone who would entered would know the force and the power of the Roman kingdom. In other words, these guys weren't guys to be messed with. And after conquering new territory, the Roman government would impose taxes on local subjects. That's where Matthew comes into the equation. His job was to collect taxes from his own people. He would go into his own community and go, give me your money. But he wouldn't just do that. He would betray his people for a paycheck, essentially. And here's the kicker. Tax collectors were required to turn in a certain amount of money. Let's call that X, the X amount of money, for all you algebra students out there. And he would turn in that X amount of money to the Roman kingdom, but they could keep anything they wanted to themselves that they collected above that. So in other words, they go around and Roman government says, I need you to collect $20 off each person. Matthew goes around and goes, I need $500 off you now. And he keeps $480 for himself. Rude, I know. But they were allowed and even expected to extort money from their own people to line their pockets. They were traitors, thieves, bullies, and it's no wonder they were hated so fiercely by their own people. Now, I feel like this paints a better picture for what Matthew truly was, or Levi, I should say. That was the reason Matthew went by his Greek name. Greek was the language of the day, so Levi would not have been the most culturally acceptable name to the Romans. Matthew had been born into the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, but he didn't care about that. He cared about money, power, and all those other interesting things to the world. So instead of being Levi the Jew, he took on a new identity, Matthew the tax collector, Matthew the traitor, Matthew the extortionist. By working for Rome, Matthew had turned his back on his Jewish heritage. To put this into context, imagine that a foreign power has attacked your country. First, they kill attack, imprison, or enslave your family and friends. Then they begin to rule your life with an iron fist. To top it off, they impose a suffocating tax, and to collect the tax, they hire your neighbor, you know, old mate. And suddenly the guy who used to grill steaks with you in your backyard is now your enemy. He uses everything he knows about you against you. And with the full backing of the conquering nation, he takes what he wants from you and your loved ones. Everything you can hardly feeds your kids, and he has a Ferrari parked in his driveway. You tell me, is that a good person? Is that the guy you want to be friends with? Is that someone you want to hang with? Is that the type of someone you want to be excited about going to church with? Is that the type of guy or girls you want to take home to mummy and daddy? Is that someone you would trust with anything you value? Me neither, to be honest. And that's why it's so startling that Jesus made friends with people like Matthew. He didn't just talk to them, he loved them, he cared them, he became best friends with them, he changed them, and he made them a part of his story. It's unbelievable. It's not even like socially acceptable. Here's how Matthew himself described the encounter with Jesus. Like a true godfather, he referred to himself in third person. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at his tax collector's booth. Follow me and be my disciple, Jesus said to him. So Matthew got up, followed him. Later, Matthew invited Jesus and his disciples to his home as dinner guests, along with many tax collectors and other disputable. But when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with such a scum? When Jesus heard this, he said, healthy people don't need a doctor. Sick people do. Then he added, now go and learn the meaning of this scripture. I want you to show mercy, not offer sacrifices. For I have come to call not those who think they are righteous, but those who know they are sinners. That's in Matthew 9:9-13. Notice that Jesus didn't give Matthew an application to fill out. He didn't go, here, that's my terms and conditions in order to be friends with me. He didn't put him on probation for 3 months. He didn't make him pinky promise to never extort money again. He didn't even lead him in the sinner's prayer. Jesus simply said, follow me and be my disciple. Really, Jesus? People must have been thinking, what qualifies this gangster to be your disciple in their minds? Being Jewish was the only chance for salvation. Matthew, the wannabe Roman, was a textbook sinner. In the epitome of evil, a prime example of people the Messiah that would one day come to judge. Yet Jesus called him and Matthew followed him just like that, like the drop of a hat. We read it so quickly and so casually sometimes. But when you stop to consider who this man was and the implications are staggering, just look at the reactions of people. Back then, why does your teacher eat with such a scum, they asked. Like, what a harmful word, scum. They are probably that's probably the censored PG-rated version of what they actually said. I'd imagine there'd be some more interesting adjectives, but it'd be in Greek, so who knows what they actually meant. Today, if a celebrity or high-profile person talks about Jesus, there is often an instant pushback from religious people. Have you ever noticed that? What could he know about Jesus? Have you seen his music videos? Justin Bieber's the first person that comes to mind. Like, do you remember what he used to do? What a terrible guy. Like, they actually know him personally. And they actually ask, how could that person know Jesus? How could he be in a relationship with Jesus? That's a disgrace. Plus, he's on his third marriage. And everyone he knows does drugs. What a shameful thing to do. He can't possibly know God. Often they even quote Bible verses that appear to back up their judgmental stance. Have you ever met people like that or seen those trolls on the internet? They go like, oh yeah, Isaiah 6 verses, only the half of the first verse. Yeah, there, that's it. That backs up my statement. Take it completely out of context, of course. But verses about fruit, about holiness and usually about hell as well. Just to chuck that in there, a bit of fear. That should fix them up. I'm certainly not contradicting those verses, but if we truly want to follow Jesus, then we have to understand his message and his heart. Jesus sought out and befriended a known criminal. Then he names him one of his core group of followers. That's like someone coming here to youth that was, you know, just been in a detention center. They had robbed their grandma, kicked their mum in the head, and then also done some other, probably like stole the dog and drowned him. They come to youth and we're all like staring at them like, that person's a terrible person. They've actually got an ankle bracelet on, so they're not even, you know, are they in their radius? Who knows? Then they come sit at the front, they give their life to Jesus, and then they say, I want to be on team. And I go, yeah, mate, you can be on core team. You know, the core group of leaders. And you all guys would probably be like, I say what? Nah, and your parents would be like, nah, they're not going back there. That's crazy. That's a crazy place. If that doesn't fit in our idea that we need a new, if that doesn't fit in our idea of church, then we need a new idea of church. The message, let's be honest, sometimes we make it too difficult for people to follow Jesus. We forget about faith is a journey. and that on a journey, we are all in different places. We can't expect that a person who's just beginning to follow Jesus will have the same faith as someone who's, you know, been on the journey for so long. We'll have the faith, the actions, the vocabulary of someone who has been in a relationship with Jesus for years. God certainly doesn't, and religion tends to look for outward signs that we are qualified to follow God, but Jesus shatters that idea time and time again. He doesn't wait for us to clean ourselves up or renounce our lifestyles, be like, yep, I'm finished with that life. He finds us where we are and calls us to follow him. No applications or qualifications needed. That's why I think Matthew's story is such a perfect illustration of Jesus' message. So what was Jesus' message? It wasn't that good people go to heaven. It wasn't that bad people will be judged. Those are cheap imitations of his message. Jesus' message was grace. It was salvation for those who believe in him. It was mercy and compassion and forgiveness for all those who put faith in him. And I'll go even further. Jesus was the personification and the embodiment of the word grace. In other words, Jesus himself is the message. Jesus is the purpose and he is the point. The message doesn't have mere sort of doctrine or some sort of theology. It isn't behavioral change. The message is that no matter who you are or how badly you've messed up, grace and forgiveness are available in Jesus. That's why Jesus came to earth in physical, tangible, human form. He came not only to tell us about grace, but to literally be grace for over 33 years. His life and his message gives life. The more we follow Jesus, the more we find our lives are defined and transformed by God's love and grace. Jesus' life is the message of grace. It's a message of unconditional and unending acceptance by God, based on his grace and received through faith in Jesus. I've discovered that it's one thing to agree with grace or even recite verses that are grace, but it's another thing to truly understand it and start to live it. Honestly, that's where we tend to miss the message the most. We listen to grace on Sunday, but then we live with guilt, law, and condemnation Monday through Saturday. Who Jesus is and why he came to earth is the best news the world has ever heard. It's not hard news, bad news, complicated news, or frightening news. It's just good news. The message of Jesus is one of hope, joy, peace, and freedom. When Jesus is our message, we realize that everyone is a candidate to be called by God. Rather than being stuck on people's current behavior, we recognize we are equally qualified, or better said, equally unqualified to be followers and disciples. Matthew understood this about Jesus. When he threw a party for Jesus, the guest list consisted of many tax collectors and other disputable sinners. This was not the typical squad of a Jewish teacher. I can imagine Matthew calling all his friends, "You've got to meet this guy, Jesus. He accepted me. He believed in me. He loved me. He delivered me and he changed me." He wanted them all to meet Jesus. I find sometimes the really religious people in life and in church will often ask you, "How can you be friends with certain people? How can you hang out with those people who don't adhere to their definition of a Christian lifestyle and whether we should?" But it's simple. I believe because Jesus was. Some will get it, but some will sort of then won't and sort of be a bit defensive. Sure, Jesus hung out with sinners, but then he repented them, baptized them immediately in that moment and got them to follow him. Not true. Many did, but many didn't. And the truth is, when it comes to faith, everyone is on their own journey, but they still need friends along the way. Grace levels the playing field, though. Grace reminds us that we are all equally bad. We're all tax collectors, so to speak. But here's the good news. We're all friends of Jesus. If he's the friend of sinners, then we are the sinners, and he's our friend. Not because we earned it, not because we even asked for it, because God loves the world, and he sent his son Jesus to save the world. Outward actions and changed lifestyles are important. Sin hurts us. After all, it robs us of our humanity and strips us of our dignity. But we were created to live better than that. Holiness, however, is the result of salvation, not the road to it. Better behavior is a byproduct of the work of Jesus, not even the most important one. Love, peace, joy, and other internal transformations are far more significant than dropping a few fewer F-bombs here and there. But when we miss the message, we start to think actions and behavior are the goal. We can't afford to get wrapped up in the effects. We can't get the order reversed. We must be consumed with the cause and the goal of life itself, Jesus. It's when we meet Jesus, of course, we will experience genuine life change. Matthew left everything to follow Jesus. This is what happens with the gospel. Even though meeting Jesus results in massive life change, the emphasis is not on how hard we must work to accomplish the change. The emphasis is on Jesus. When we follow him, we find ourselves taking steps and making decisions we probably never would have dared to attempt on our own. This is the power of understanding the message of Jesus. We will find ourselves growing and changing from the inside out. Suddenly life looks different. Depression is no match for our joy. Addictions are no equal for our identities. Temptations can be overcome. Sin holds no power. Victory is within reach. The future is full of potential. Who would you be in Matthew's story? Saint or sinner? Pharisee or friend? Holier than thou or wholly messed up? Regardless of who you are or what you've done, the heart of God is the same. He loves you. Right now, right here, just as you are, like Matthew, Jesus is your friend. He's calling you to know him, to rest in him, and to follow him. Will you let him? Right now, I'm just going to pray before we go, and I really encourage you. This week, if you ever get a moment, just spend it, or actually make a moment to spend time with Jesus. Just stay in that moment. This world is so busy. It's so consumed. It's so, everything needs to be instant. Everything needs to happen now. If we can just get into the practice of going, you know what? I just need a moment of rest. Not that I actually need to just sit on my phone and scroll on Instagram and talk to the babes and the chicky guys and all those sort of things. No, actually just rest and relax and go, you know what? I actually just need a moment to myself. Put my phone away even. Put the iPad, put the computer and every other piece of technology that's in my life and actually just sit in a place where it's quiet and have my Bible, have my journal and just actually pray and listen to what God wants to speak to me and just read his word. Get closer to him. Learn more about him, because I promise you, the more you press into God, the more your life will change without you even realizing. Suddenly, your temple will grow. Suddenly, peace will start to overflow you. Suddenly, you'll feel like you have more patience with people. You'll feel like you're more relaxed. You'll feel like your worries are gone, your anxieties, your depression. It all leaves in an instant once Jesus fills your heart. And I just really encourage you to start to press more into God, press more into his words, and actually press more into having a relationship with him rather than just a religion. And so right now, I'm just going to pray, and then we're going to go. And yeah, dear God, I just thank you right now for tonight. I thank you for the amazing people who are here. I thank you for the amazing plans and purposes you have for them. I thank you for the amazing potential that they have through lives through you. I thank you that through you, Lord, you give us lives that we couldn't even grasp, lives that we couldn't even understand. There is fields out there waiting for us to step into that we didn't even know were possible, but because they are possible because you're involved in it, Lord. And Father, I just thank you for the amazing gifts of your Son, Jesus, that came onto earth and came into life just to simply have a relationship with us. Not anything else, not anything more complex. He just wanted to be friends with us. He just wanted to have an open relationship with us where he talks about his love and his patience for us and the peace that is always overflowing, ready for our hearts and for our minds. And so, Father, I pray that you help us, that you go before us in our weeks. You help us to be kinder to our friends, to be more patient with those around us. And Father, may you help us to set aside time where we can just spend time with you, spend time in your presence, spend time worshiping you, praying to you, and seeking after you, Father, so we can develop more of a deeper relationship with you, Father, than just a religion that we have for you. In Jesus' name, amen.